Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
Have you not learned that this show is basically about doing what makes me happy and what makes me laugh?
I don't know if that's a fact. Did you pull a Jacob pronoun?
I don't know what a Jacob is.
Told you.
Doesn't know. Oh, did you poo before the stream?
Oh, no. I came from a bar, so I was pissing.
Tinkle time. Huh. I told you it was a tinkle time.
Tinkle time. Yeah. I think that's what we're going to call it. Pulling a Jacob or a tinkle time?
Tinkle time.
I'm good for that. I call it tinkle time.
I like
that. I also call it epiphany.
Epiphany?
That's right.
That's what I would call it.
Did you say epiphany or an epiphany? Yeah.
An epiphany, which is close to epiphany or like an epiphany, but it's an epiphany.
An epiphany. That's what I thought it was.
Fair.
Fair. They're both good.
They are.
They are both very functional.
Today, it's just us tonight. Should we get started?
Yeah, today's going to be an extremely short podcast.
Well, in general, how are you guys doing? I haven't been telling me that much.
I've been sick for like 24 hours now. I just want to crawl in bed.
I've slept for 14 hours straight, so.
14? Wow.
Yeah.
I haven't done nothing since college.
I went to sleep at 6 a.m. this morning, and I got up at just past 8 p.m.
Now, were you under-rested prior to that? Or
I'm always under-rested. I usually get 4 or 5 hours of sleep a night. I'm usually too busy playing games.
I can relate to that, though my body's like, fuck your games. It just passes out while I'm holding the controller. But at least it's at 2 a.m., so it's not like I'm passing out at 10. It's just I can't stay up till 4 knowing I got to be up at 8. My body tells me otherwise. So, but I get by. But as long as you're enjoying yourself and the 16 hours feels real good, which it should.
I was supposed to be up at 2.
That did like, not happen.
Yeah, no, it did not. I'm lucky my package wasn't stolen. I got another couple of gunpla in today, and I wanted to be up by the time that was supposed to get there, because occasionally
that's probably the biggest shock of the day so far is that you got more gunpla.
Yeah, I know.
If you had to throw a dart and take a guess, how many gunpla do you think you own now?
Around 200 and something.
Wow. And I can see, and the reason why I'm like, wow, in this case is like, I mean, I understand having things that take up a lot of space, but gunpla, when you build them, you have to display them somewhere. Or do you take them apart and rebuild them later?
I have around 80-ish of them displayed right now. I have another 40-ish of them built and sitting in their boxes at the moment because I've run out of space to display them. But I'm getting 2 new bookshelves, and that's this month, later this month, and that's all they're being used for, is just that. So
you got to get a big table and do like battle displays. Every couple of weeks or so, just like create a new battle display using all the gunpla.
That people actually do that for competitions and stuff. Do that for a simple reason. The more you fiddle with your gunpla, because they're model kits, not action figures, the more it wears down the joints until they don't hold position anymore. So I tend to just put them in whatever pose I want, and kind of I just leave them there.
Oh, yeah, I can see why you would do that then. Would have got to preserve them because they weren't cheap.
No. Matter of fact, I'm almost done building one that cost me $181.
Damn.
Yeah, it's the only perfect grade kit I have, but it was an expensive cocksucker. It's not the most expensive one I own, but it's I think the second most expensive one.
Damn.
Great Google mother.
Yeah, most expensive one I own was like $320-ish.
It goes back to you're definitely getting use out of them, though.
Oh, that one I haven't even touched yet. It's still in its box untouched, because that's gonna be like a month long build at least.
I also just envy that you're even doing it. Like, I was looking through my stuff recently, trying to get a cabinet thing up so I can put my printer on top of it. And I was like, I just gotta empty these drawers out and I can use it for my office storage. Turns out all those drawers just have unopened amiibo in them. Lots and lots of unopened amiibo. And I'm like, where am I supposed to put these damn things now?
Well, isn't the whole point of an amiibo to open it and scan something for your video games or some shit and then throw it away?
The box.
Oh.
No, you can't.
You were able to scan it through the box, so didn't even have to open them.
Didn't they have like foil protectors?
No, not the ones I was using.
Scan them.
They might have changed it in future releases, but the ones I was using, no, you could just scan them right through the box.
No, then why the fuck bother opening it?
Keep
them as collector's edition things.
Every single one I remember buying had like a little cardboard and foil cap that it sat in so that you couldn't scan it through the plastic. You had to open them. So I don't know if you got like an earlier run of them or what.
That's what I'm thinking. It wouldn't surprise me. Like the times when I was actually attempting it, because keep in mind, I was buying them for far longer than I was scanning them. Mm. The times I was doing it, I absolutely could. But I would not put it past Nintendo to learn people were doing that and just saying, nope, we got to stop this. So then they cap it. So it's very possible a bunch of mine have that cap. But the time when I was actually using the amiibos for their intended purpose instead of just displaying them, no.
Hmm.
I mean, you got to figure, in most cases, if something exists, it's because someone made the company realize that they had to put it in there in the first place. So, just like how I used to scam Target, and then they said, we can't let people do that shit no more, so they changed the entire gift card policy, so I couldn't do my shit. So, well,
it wasn't just you. You could take solace in that. It was definitely more than you.
Definitely.
I can't even imagine what you're referencing, so it wasn't me. That's for damn sure.
10% return investment on store credit, basically.
Oh, nifty.
Yeah, it was pretty good. My coworker for claiming it was too difficult. I'm like, nah, it just sounds like you're being lazy. It was easy as shit, which is why they had to stop people from doing it. So it was very easy to do. I mean, when they finally capped it, I had store credit for years, literal years before I ran out. So
good Lord.
It was good.
What's the last thing you spent your credit on?
Probably groceries, because that was the best part. People were like, how many video games do you need? I'm like, they sell groceries. I mean, what do I care? I'm perfectly fine getting food with the money. But I would buy video games. I bought groceries. I bought memory cards. I bought all kinds of stuff. I mean, it was
nice.
That was the general vibe. People were like, what are you going to do with money at Target? Like, you can only spend it at Target. I'm like, Target has tons of stuff I would buy consistently.
Yeah.
Again, most notably are groceries.
Target's a great place to have credit. Like, why wouldn't you want credit at Target? Them and Walmart. Exactly. Like, you could get fucking anything there.
Exactly. See, because you get it. And like, people are like having it locked in one store. It's like, yeah, but if it's a store I shop at regularly and will likely never stop going to, why would I not want the credit there? And at the time, hell, even right now, what can you think of that isn't the stock market that will give you 10% return investment? Yeah. Nothing. Yeah. Nothing. So it's like easy peasy for me. I'm doing it. And I did it. And now they don't let you do it anymore. Because fuck.
Yeah, well. So what else have you been up to? Like, obviously, we're not doing an intro this episode because I'm just recording the whole thing. So we're using pretty much all of that. Yeah.
Ain't nothing wrong with that.
So how have you been, Pernell? What have you been up to?
All aboard the social struggle bus, but other than that, I've been pretty good. Trying to go to more bars. I hate them. Still playing games. I like the people. I just hate the bars. Like, I like hanging out with my friends. I just wish people did stuff that didn't involve bars. Because I'm not a pickup artist, and I'm not good at talking to strangers there. So in my case, it's like, it's not serving my purpose. But aside from that, you know, I'm still buying games. I don't get to play as much as I would like, but I still get my game on when I can. I'm trying to get back into exercise because old man lower back pain is trying to make me stop. And I'm like, fuck you. So I'm still doing stuff anyway. But I'd be lying if I said it was easy. But I'd also be lying if I told you that I believe that stopping was the answer. So I am still trying to exercise despite the fact that lower back pain is trying to encroach upon my life. Looking forward to, actually, it's hard to say. Part of me doesn't look forward to the end of this year for obvious reasons, but at the same time, I'm trying to make plans for like what I hope to accomplish next year, like start finally maybe taking some trips and stuff. So I look forward to that aspect of things, despite me also feeling like I need to start capping and hoarding money. And then aside from that, just hanging out with friends and trying to make sense of this world we live in. How about you?
The same. I don't know. I've been feeling crappy. I haven't been playing much. It's like the year end funk is starting to hit me early this year.
Yeah.
I am looking forward to our break this year. We're about a month away from our break. We have a few more weeks of shows to handle, and I think we're going to take a good solid month off.
I think it'll be a good break. It'll be good.
Disappear for the majority of January, maybe all of January. We're looking like December 19th is going to be our last show of the year, maybe earlier. If we don't have any games coming in, we'll see how the lineup is. And then returning, I guess it depends on numbering how I want to do things. Like if we end on a Thursday, I would want to come back on a Tuesday. But if we do a show in the middle of January to catch up on stuff, I would want to return on a Thursday to keep that odd numbered, even numbered scheme going. Number scheme.
This has to be pretty interesting. I didn't realize you were keeping track of that, but that makes sense.
Yeah, I try to keep it so that Thursdays are the even numbers and Tuesdays are the odd numbers.
Even Stevens and odd Todds.
Yep.
I dig it.
That's why the anniversary episodes happen on Thursdays.
Oh, yeah, it does make sense. Because I'm good, usually like, hey, can you make it around Thursday? Like, shit, I can't. But also, maybe I can. We'll see how this plays out. So that does make sense. But just imagine if it ever shifted. Then I could always be there on anniversaries. And other people can have the stress to get in on time. It's perfect.
Maybe I should just stop taking that shit seriously and just whatever numbers happen.
Yeah, if it gives you joy, why not?
It's like an OCD thing, and I can't get over it. Like, I want these on even, these on odd. And
if it makes you happy, do it. And if it doesn't, stop. That's
not that it makes me happy. It's just what I've been doing. Just the system I've been in for how many years now. The next question
might be just don't fix it if it ain't broke.
True.
I'm a major proponent of don't fix it if it ain't broke.
Oh man, so what did you do tonight? What was it, the music bingo again?
Yeah, so I have a friend of mine who invites me out to attend that, and I want to be social and also do things that, you know, non-nerds do. So I was like, yeah, I'll go to that, and they're good people, but I also find myself feeling like I don't quite belong or I don't fit in. So ultimately, I'm perfectly fine being there. I mean, no one there dislikes me or anything like that. It's just more like I want to talk, and it's hard to be like, okay, be sociable, go talk to that random stranger at the bar and interact with all these people you don't know. So I just find myself kind of being like, I'm going to sit here and drink and listen to music and talk to my friends when I feel the opening arise, but otherwise just kind of be present. So it's not that I'm not even having a bad time, but if it makes sense to say, it's more like you want something to happen that isn't. So it makes you feel like you're having a bad time. But the truth is you're perfectly content otherwise.
Yeah.
It's weird, right?
I've always been kind of a wallflower guy too. So I understand the feeling of not really feeling like you belong or that, like, I don't know. Anytime I would like go to a bar with friends, I never felt like I was supposed to be there.
I feel like, well, I usually say it to be like people who met their significant others through dorky memes. Congratulations, because that's pretty much the gist of it. I can tell you right now, if I didn't have that gnawing at my neck or gnawing at my back, I wouldn't even care. Bars would be a cakewalk because think of it like this. If you have everything you want or need socially, nothing else can get in to mess with you, right? Like, think of people who honestly don't care about that kind of stuff. It's like, I ain't trying to talk to nobody, and I just like playing games and being dorky, right? Like, they wall everything else off because it doesn't impact their thought process, doesn't impact their lives or their social thoughts. So it's like, okay, well, whatever. I'm here. I'm drinking. And if I don't talk to nobody, fuck it. I came here to drink and sit. And that's all I need, right? But when you subconsciously are telling yourself you want to engage with random people, it adds extra weight to the interactions, and that's when it becomes problematic, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Aki, what are your thoughts? Chime in on this. What do you think of all that? Are you a social butterfly, or do you stay home?
I'm agoraphobic, which means I don't leave my house. What makes you think I'm a social butterfly?
Because you seem like a party girl deep down.
Just because I can handle my booze doesn't make me a party girl. It makes me an alcoholic. There's a difference.
It means she likes to drink.
I mean, alcohol tastes fine, so why not? I can probably outdrink everyone on the podcast, realistically speaking.
No, back in the day, I questioned that. Nowadays, I'm pretty sure you could outdrink me. But there was a point where I would wager you could not.
What's the most amount of shots you had in a night?
That's what I'm saying. Now, I'm not denying you can outdrink me.
No, I said most in a night that you've done, period.
Ever.
I don't even know, because I wasn't drinking shots. I was drinking multiple bottles of like 15%, and it adds up real fast.
I mostly drink either Bailey's Irish Cream, which is something you're supposed to put in a shot, or I drink shots of Rattlesnakes, which has Bailey's Irish Cream in it. So, and the most I drink of that is in one of our podcasts.
Trash Rando, if you remember, then you weren't that hammered.
Yeah, I don't get hammered. I've never been hammered in my life. But in one of our podcasts, one of our special ones, I don't remember which one it was. I think it was the 420 one. I drank 22 in an hour.
Damn.
That was a fun episode, too. That
was fine.
For me, it's a situation where I'll be like, I'm hanging out at a party or with a group of people or at a bar or something, and you're just drinking to interact. So if someone comes by like, hey, who wants a shot? I'm going to obviously go, yeah, I'll do a shot. And if it just happens to be 10 shots in 5 minutes, I just happen to drink 10 shots in 5 minutes. And I have done that before. It's like, me. Oh, fuck, I'm in trouble. Also,
yeah, on my 21st, my parents tried to get me drunk by making rattlesnake after rattlesnake after rattlesnake. It didn't work. My stepdad got a headache and my mom started throwing up. So.
Is that when you learned you had a genetic abnormality that prevented you from getting drunk?
Oh, I can get drunk pretty easily. If I don't eat anything, I drink just a little bit and I immediately get sick.
I was about to say, you literally just described a scenario that would make me think it is not easy for you to get drunk.
Yeah, as long as I have food in my system, I can drink as much as I want and I'm fine.
So you can eat a chicken nugget.
And I can drink quite a bit after that, yeah.
Damn. That single chicken nugget. I'm going back to genetic abnormality, by the way.
Yeah, probably. I just need something in my system to keep my stomach from being unsettled. It's kind of like, you know, how some medications are like, take this with a meal or something. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they make me incredibly sick unless I eat like a handful of like cereal or something, and then I'm fine.
Damn.
We want to keep this in mind. We're getting dragged into a drinking contest, and the loser gets killed.
I think the most I drank in a night was one of the 1.75 liter bottles of Parrot Bay mixed with Mountain Dew over a night.
Bananas.
You may have coconut. Drank. I don't know how much alcohol content that is, but that's definitely more alcohol, I think, than I've probably drank in a night, because I've had
21%. It looks 42 proof.
See, that's the dilemma there. Like, it's one thing to say I do X number of shots, but you're just like, I just drink bottle after bottle after bottle after bottle. You kind of just lose track, and next thing you know, you're throwing up everywhere. It's just kind of how it goes.
Yeah, I once drank a chunk of a thing of Mudslide that had rum in it, but that's the closest I've gotten to a 1.7 liters.
It's like a 2 liter bottle. Big deal. Chug a 2 liter.
Pepsi. I've never drank that.
2 liter Parrot Bay, 2 liter Mountain Dew, mix them together. God, you're set for the night.
And the night is set for you because you're going to suffer later.
Although I did switch over to what's the watermelon or the melon liqueur.
I'm not even sure.
Oh, what the hell is it?
There's a bunch of them, so I don't know.
What the hell is it?
I'm not sure if absinthe has a flavor.
What'd you say?
I would say I'm not even sure if absinthe has a flavor.
I've never had absinthe.
I'm pretty sure its flavor is pain.
Oh, Midori. Mountain Dew and Midori is my new jam.
Ooh.
Mountain Dew and melon liquor. Mix them. Mm.
That sounds tasty.
Try it at MAGFest. I'll show you.
All right. Well, if this thing plays out, I'll probably be there. I haven't decided if I'm going all in or not yet. You know, if I do, usually it's the typical. I'll be there for like a day and then drive both ways or something.
Well, show up and hang out in the SML room because me and Andy are going to be there. Doc Havoc's going to be there. Our friend Moguda, Chris Ginnup, is going to be there. And then fucking Tony Dickinson of the Tiberian Sons and Trans-Siberian Orchestra is going to be in our room.
Sounds like it'll be a good group of people.
It's going to be a musical party room, I have a feeling. It should be a fun time.
A music canal, even. Well, I'll keep you in the know for sure. We'll see, join the panel again,
Purnell. We got to do the lumberjack panel again.
They didn't approve it, did they?
Not yet, but they didn't approve anything yet.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. If they approve it, I mean, that's my usual stipulation. Like, if they approve it, I'll come out because at least I can get in. It's just a matter of me making the drive or not.
Yeah.
So, and I honestly feel like it's a good deal on MAGFest part too, because it's not like I'm going in there and like taking up space in their concerts and stuff. I literally show up just to hang out with people for a while and go home.
You should do the concerts. There's some good stuff.
I mean, usually I go if I'm hanging out with people. That's what I mean. The people are the primary, but I never go to say, I got to see this band. It's usually, hey, you're going to that concert. I guess I'll just go with you.
And I'm going to see Super Strikers. I want to see them this year.
Well, that's great.
That's why I fucking went to VGMCon was to see Super Strikers. So
I would literally be seeing them 3 times in 1 year.
I know. I love it.
They are wearing my Grant
Henry shirt today. My Ball Squad shirt.
I mean, if you didn't have to tell us, you could just say you're wearing it and we'd believe you.
I'm on camera on the stream.
You could just say you're wearing shirt. It. We believe you.
You can see it says 10 years on it.
Yeah, just tell us you're wearing it. We'll believe you. Underneath.
Okay, I'm wearing my Ball Squad shirt. Can you see it?
Ball Squad. That is awesome. Congratulations. That's such a great shirt.
I know. Comfortable.
It's comfy and easy to wear.
What do you think, Grant Henry? Thank you, Grant Henry.
Grant knows what's up.
Oh, so what have you been playing?
Generally review games, but the big find that I had in the last week that I think is really cool, and I don't think anybody is going to ever play it aside from me. It's a roguelike called Rogue Voltage. Very unlike other roguelikes I've played. It does the whole connected nodes and going from node to node for a battle or a shop or whatever bit that many of them do since Slay the Spire did it. But it's the combat that makes it sing, because you do battle by creating circuits, and the circuitry determines what activities can take place during a round. So, like, you'll have electricity generators that generate different types of current, and then you have to wire it to additional nodes that can have various effects. So it's essentially a programming game, but the programs you create determines the attacks you can do. And it is stupidly addictive. Like, I think it's really good. But I also think it's a game that a lot of people will ignore. Another game is one that just came out recently that I've been waiting on for a while, that is also a roguelike big shock, called Dimensionals. It screams Saturday morning cartoon, which is what drew me to it. So it came out, I bought it, I dabbled a little bit, and I think it is fantastic. Like, aside from that,
you should tell me about these before they come out. I'll try getting them for you.
I think about it sometimes, but then I get impulsive. It's like sometimes I almost buy the game because I want that dopamine hit that says you got a new thing. So I just end up buying it and scratching the itch. Like, you'd be surprised how many games I've picked up in recent weeks just because I want to support like random indie games that come out, and I just be like, well, I can just buy it right now and I'm good. like these doomed isles. I bought Wizardry, the five ordeals, definitely not fried chicken, Unrail 2, Athena
what
Crisis.
What the hell is definitely not fried chicken?
It is a game where you're selling drugs out of a fried chicken restaurant.
It's a very weird sim.
I mean,
very weird sim.
It is KFC. It's, you know, finger licking good. Might as well add something to the chicken. Make it a little finger more licking finger licking crack. Good. Yeah.
Definitely not crack. Fried chicken. Business fried management cooking. Sim with a twist. Grow your drugs trade through legitimate fronts by managing both sides of the business. Acquire new businesses, meet new clientele, develop more potent narcotics, make lots of money, and leave a city in ruin.
There you go. Then there's Somna Buster, which I bought recently, which is a. It reminded me of like music I would hear from like a TurboGrafx game or certain Genesis games. So, and then the platform, it reminds me of like a combination of like Sonic and Rystar. So I was like, I'll get that. Like I said, I just have a habit of just grabbing games that seem cool. Linked in that weird Capcom Kamutsugami game that came out, I bought that. Like, I just grab things, and whether I play them or not is another story, but I get them being like, scratch the itch for a little bit. So I do that a lot.
You're just a shopaholic is what I've learned today. Okay.
Not even, because shopaholic would imply I buy all sorts of things like drugs or blankets or...
Not necessarily. You could just be buying the things that you want and then you never really do anything with them, which is what you just admitted to doing.
Oh, I'm not denying
still
that.
Still a shopaholic.
I'm not denying any of that. I mean, it'd be nice if I didn't do that.
He's a digital hoarder, just like me.
Yeah. And I mean, one day I will not be that person, but I'm also not ashamed to admit that I am because...
Won't be that person. One day you won't be alive anymore. Of course you won't be that person at that point.
Let's rephrase that. One day I will not be that person while I'm still alive.
I don't know about that.
That's the thing with the digital library. Those are yours forever. So you're always going to be a digital hoarder because you'll always have, like, I could stop gaming right now. I could live to be 85 and I'll still have a ridiculous game library.
Oh yeah. When I make that statement, I'm specifically referring to not getting new stuff though, like that. Mm. But yeah, you're 100% right. The short of the companies retracting licenses, which is a possibility. I will always have these products. And if you do emulation, you will always have the ROMs unless your hard drive goes to shit and you didn't back it up. But yeah, it's just the nature of how it is. I mean, there are people who blow money on worse things. I mean, that one guy who collects fancy sports cars, I think I might have spent the amount of money equivalent to half a sports car at this point. So, I mean, is it all that bad? Not really. And I mean, the guy who's buying the sports car, odds are he's not going to drive the speed limit, the speed that that car can hit, because he's not going to take it to a place where he's able to do that. So...
I mean, to be fair, most people own cars that have speed limits that they'll never touch, because most cars can go significantly faster than you're allowed to drive.
Absolutely, but at least we're not buying it with the intent. Like, why you buy that car, man? You see how fast it can go? You'll never see it.
Yeah, I hate when people
use YouTuber, some YouTuber did some product review. And he had a shot of him driving down a road, and you could see the speedometer was at like 95 driving down a road. People slowed down the video. He was in a slow children area.
See, people like that.
What a sympathetic,
man. Yeah, like, he's a piece of shit.
At least get on a fucking interstate or some shit. Good God.
Yeah, he ended up re-editing the video and taking that part down. He was like, it wasn't necessary. Motherfucker, you still drove 95 in a 35.
Yeah. Absolutely. See, no one should have told him about that. They should have just contacted the cops of his area, because God knows they know exactly where this dipshit lives.
Yeah. I'm sure he just contacted the cops.
It happened once where a guy actually died died driving the car, and people were all prepared to feel sorry for them. But then there was like camera footage at the parents' car, because they were driving their parents' car, and there was tons of footage from their parents' car cam that showed how fast they were going on pedestrian streets, and it was like, clearly you guys knew how reckless this kid was, and you still let him drive the car, and now he's dead. So I mean, this is less feeling bad and more the consequences of your actions at this point, so don't know what to tell you anymore. And it's a shame, because I have nothing against people that want to drive fast cars. I think it's awesome. I mean, we all play racing games, right? Do it where it's appropriate, exactly. There are places...
in video games.
No, even like, let's say, for example, like...
Go to a closed circuit.
Go to a closed circuit, and in some respects, like, if you're, like, say, in Indiana or some shit, I can tell you right now, Indiana interstates at night, there's nobody on those fuckers. I've driven them before, and you're going tens of hundreds of miles with maybe one other car on the road. Like, it's...
Fair. We do have awfully long stretches of nothing.
Yeah, my concern about driving fast at night is I can't see the animals that are about to jump in the middle of the road.
That is true. But with that said, at least it's a it's a calculated risk in the sense of, like, I'm worried about an animal jumping in the highway versus there might be children playing here.
Yeah.
You know, but at least you could say I chose a long stretch of highway that has very few turns and very little traffic, if not any traffic at all. At least I'll respect that, you know.
We have busy highways by our area, and we have a lot of deer in our area as well. So we'll frequently just be going to Walmart, driving down the highway, and we'll just see a splatter on the highway.
Damn. And like, just, not even like a dead deer, just like...
Not even a dead deer, just an explosion of a deer.
Like, mist. Like, freaking... catastrophic burst.
Yeah, if a truck hits a deer going fucking 80, that it's gonna just vaporize. Just chunks and bits. It's gross and it's sad, but...
Yeah, we should really build this stuff up where it's above the ground.
We can't teach and stuff. Deer, and it's unreasonable to think that you could fence off an entire highway. The cost of that would be ridiculous. Just gotta...
That is true, but what she's describing, there are certain areas that have done that, and I think it at least reduces it. Making those land, like either a land bridge or like building a highway overpass with lush greenery on top. Yeah. Some places have already done that, where the animals surprisingly start to realize there is a bridge up there, and we can cross there and not even think about the mystery of the asphalt. It's a weird thing, but it has worked in the past. But
I meant building a bridge for the cars to drive on, not for animals to cross over. I was thinking,
that's impossible.
What do you mean it's impossible? We have a whole highway
to make an elevated highway everywhere.
Yeah,
it would be very cost intensive, but we could do it.
It would be way too expensive. It would be cheaper to just build a fence along the highway, and that's too expensive.
Yeah, and also just awful. Like, just do the potential land bridge and give them at least an option to cross. but yeah, that no one's doing highway bridges over land that isn't a ravine. It's just not going to happen.
I think we should be building them underground, personally.
That's even worse. It's like cave-ins, but at least the animals are safe. We got fucking highways caving in.
Yeah, when was the last time you felt bad for an animal dying because of people being stupid? And when was the last time you felt bad about people dying because they're stupid? One of them happens a lot more than the other. I don't care about the people.
Yeah, I feel bad about the animals.
Exactly. Build all the roads underground.
But the fact that I'd have to drive on these terrible underground roads, then I feel bad for me, which is why it's like, nope.
It's not happening. Have to be terrible. They're basically just tunnels. You drive through tunnels all the time. It's fine.
Yeah. I've never watched cars. I don't like being under freaking harbor tunnels. You think I want to drive in underground road tunnels? No.
Oh, I love being in them. They're fun.
I'm betting you love the movie The Descent. Do you like caving? Sounds like you'd enjoy that shit. No.
I used to spelunk as a kid. I'm fine with this.
Fuck! No.
You would be like that guy who died in the cave system when he was supposed to like take a turn through something called the birth canal, and he took a wrong turn and just got stuck in the cave and died there, and they sealed it off.
Yeah, that would 100% be me.
He died upside down.
Oh, God.
After being there for like 40 hours or something.
Yeah, that fucker made a wrong turn in Albuquerque.
Yeah. They couldn't get him out. They tried ropes. They tried winches. They couldn't get the guy unstuck, and he lost his life.
Yeah.
Why does it took him that long to die with him being upside down? I would have thought that would have rendered him unconscious within like a few hours, and then he would have died soon after.
I don't know.
Who knows?
Just going off what I read online, but
ultimately the point is we don't want underground highways because people can be stupid, but I don't want to join them in their stupid. I want to drive on highways above ground and not hit animals at the same time. I think it's just a logical play for someone like me who respects life.
You mentioned those harbor tunnels. Those scared the shit out of me when I drive down there.
Yeah, like I've gotten used to them over the years, but I don't fucking like them. What's a
harbor tunnel?
Just in case, tunnels that drive under large bodies of water.
Yeah. Was it the Delaware, Virginia Bridge?
So it's just a bridge over water?
Wait. Are you thinking about the harbor or are you talking about the Chesapeake Bay Bridge now?
Oh, I'm thinking the Chesapeake Bay Bridge tunnel.
No, that connects Maryland to Virginia, but it's in a different area. But yeah, that bridge can fuck off. Like, I've ridden that thing on a bus, and when you look outside the window, you can't even see the road. All you see is water.
Oh, and it freaks scary. Me out.
Yeah, and it's 15 miles.
Tunnels that go under the water. Those are fun.
It does both. So the harbor tunnel is maybe like a 2 mile tunnel, and that goes under the Baltimore Harbor. But the Chesapeake Bay Bridge is a 15 mile bridge that goes above and underwater. And there's no land, just man made construction for the entire length. And it is not comfortable.
It is frightening to drive over.
Like, I'd rather be in a plane knowing a plane could go down than being on a road shared by other people that has no shoulder over large bodies of water. Fuck that. All it takes is one asshole to fuck it up for everybody. Imagine crashing into a car, flipping over the railing, and going into the water. That's going how I think of
the fucking ocean. Not in the water, like the fucking ocean.
Yeah, it's like, no, I sinking to the bottom
in your car and like, well, I guess I'm fucked.
And the saddest part is you might be telling yourself you want to drive carefully because of this. But at the same time, I also can understand a person speeding on the bridge because they want to get off of it as fast as fucking possible. It's like, I don't want to be here. I want to get off this thing. And yet at the same time, you're like, be fucking careful. All it takes is one of you assholes to have a pileup. Imagine emergency vehicle services having to come out there and fix that shit. Oh, God, no. The whole thing is just wrong, and there's no easy fix. It's just there.
Yeah.
I fucking hate that tunnel.
Yeah, I would be fine with the tunnel. I would not want to be on the above water part. I love the tunnel underwater parts. Those are fun. There's people one.
We're talking about things going wrong, not everything going right. And I would rather be above than below for any of that shit.
I traveled through the tunnels like that a lot when I was younger because we used to go up to Canada, and somewhere between here and there was an area that you just went underwater. I assume it was up in Michigan. I assume it went under the Great Lakes or something. I don't know. But yeah, there was one that went underwater for, you know, some time, and we always took it. Always. Yeah, I love that thing.
Yeah, as a kid, going through tunnels was fun because you were a kid and you were like, yay, everything's wonderful. But now you're an adult and you're like, everything's going to kill me.
Yeah, like, I do it because I have to. I do it because that's how roads work. But with that said, it doesn't mean I'm like, I can't wait to go underwater and have no control of my surroundings. And all it takes is one error in man-made construction or a dipshit who smashes his car down here while I'm in the tunnel to fuck me. No, don't like it.
I think there's a difference between me and both of you in so much that y'all are now adults and worried about death, apparently. And I was worried about death as a child and got the fuck over it.
No. Let's rewind five That's seconds. Fair. I'm not concerned about death.
I am.
I'm concerned about painful death. There's a difference. There's a difference. If I died in my sleep tonight, oh well, I'm fucking dead. If I have to die drowning in an underwater tunnel,
it only burns for a little bit.
No.
The funny thing is, I've heard drowning is one of the most peaceful ways to go.
Yeah, it only burns a little bit.
No, because there's people who have drowned and died and have been resuscitated. And they said that at a certain point, your body, like your brain, just releases whatever chemicals it needs to prepare you for what's about to happen. And you just get really calm and you just accept what's going to happen and you close your eyes and you go away.
And but then they came back. But before that happens.
Oh, yeah. Before that happens, you're freaking the fuck out. But
yeah, I mean, all you gotta do is put your head in a plastic bag and you can learn for your fucking self. No. Don't want it.
Actually, there's a difference between a plastic bag and drowning. Actually, it's a pretty severe one.
I know. I want neither. The point is, I want oxygen in my body at all times. No water. Unless I'm drinking that shit.
This episode started talking about sickness and now we're talking about death. Yeah, this shit's getting depressing. Let's talk about games. How about that?
Sure. Just call the episode Fuck That Tunnel and then we can, yeah.
I was going to call Under the Sea.
Under the Sea.
Where you will drown, whatever. Let's go.
We got reviews. Let's get to them. We got four games to talk about tonight. The first one is Pharmagia, developed by Marvelous, published by Marvelous and Xseed, released November 1st on Switch, PS5, PC for $49.99. Command an army of monsters in this all-new action game featuring character designed by famed manga artist Hiro Mashima? Aki? Ooh. You know Hiro Mashima?
He's like, I went to Silent. I'm thinking about tunnels.
Yeah. Take a stand to free the people of Felicidad as Pharmagia named 10, while monster farming, adventure, and heretic battles come together in an epic tale of rebellion and friendship. Cornell, tell us about this game.
I just can't help realizing that Felicidad is clearly a portmanteau of Feliz Navidad, but whatever. This game takes place in the case of you controlling an individual by the name of 10, who is... typical JRPG anime trope of young boy in world war-torn who is somehow semi the chosen one who is kicking ass and taking names. He is a Pharmagia, basically a person who, for the first time in video game history, is a person who controls monsters and beasts that he obtains by growing them out of the ground using seeds and water. He farms animals and then uses them.
You know what we farm?
Subs.
We farm subs. Mr. Coolness, thank you so much for subbing for the fifth month. Always appreciate seeing you here, hanging out, keeping us company. Enjoy the emotes. Enjoy the kitty cats. Enjoy Purnell's face scrolling across the screen.
I'm sorry.
I like that emote. If you put them all across the chat, it just looks like your head is moving across the whole thing.
Just observing all.
Yes.
Seeing all.
So Pharmagia.
So I've seen a good bit of Pharmagia. So this game, as a result of what I just described, results in you taking place over a series of processes. The most important thing being the actual acquisition of animals by way of farming them. And I'll talk about what you do with them after the growing, because there's a narrative. The narrative is kind of meh. Honestly, I like the characterization.
I thought you were about to cut to commercial there. You're like, I'll talk about those after the break.
After these messages. But the narrative itself, I could do without, even though I don't mind the characterizations and the characters interacting on the still image story scenes that have become pretty commonplace in games like this. But the gameplay involves you actually managing a farm. The farm allows you to do a number of things, such as removing weeds, tilling the fields to produce lots to plant seeds into, and then you water the seeds, and then depending on the type of seed you plant, there is a time that takes place between the planting and the actual harvesting of the seeds. And there are different types of seeds you can plant. Most notably are Battle Buddy seeds, where after you plant the seed and let it harvest for a few days, it will grow into an animal that you can add to your battle party. There's also Research Buddies, which are seeds that are made to represent many of the different monsters you can fight during the game. Once you plant those, generally they take up multiple lots, mind you, it's not a single lot animal, but when you plant and then grow three of them, you will get a research point, which can be spent on a grid, like a node grid, to get unlock upgrades and the like. And funny enough, the way I described it is easy, it's simpler than how the game does it, but that's essentially what it is. Grow three of the same monster, get points to spend on upgrades. And the upgrades can be things that make farming more efficient. It can be making your monsters more powerful, unlocking new evolutions for them, which I will again talk about in a minute, and even learning new skills and the like. But once you've done enough farming for the day, because you have a certain number of points you can spend per day, and when you run out of points, you're not doing it again for a little while. But once you've done that, you will then proceed to go to the ranch. At the ranch, you can spend basically mood points or effort points to train your animals in various stats, such as endurance, attack, or teamwork, to increase their stats in those departments. You spend mint jelly or mint zingy jelly. It's a goofy name to produce these results. After a certain number of levels that are obtained by doing this, you need to get the next version of that and also reach a certain story milestone to do it again. So the game kind of soft locks you out of supercharging your monsters by forcing this, which is kind of annoying because it kind of makes the whole thing feel superficial, because I can just hoard Zingy Jelly and I'm like, okay, I went and did some grinding in the map, time to go, you know, juice up my monsters. Nope, got to wait till a story bit. They basically force you to not be super juiced up. But anyway, you can do that with your animals. And then if you feel as though you've overtrained them, but there's more room for you to grow, you can feed them a treat to increase their motivation so you can then resume training them further. The lower their motivation, the lower their stat gains from training will be. So you do not want to waste time training them with low motivation. Just don't freaking do it. And then there's one more thing you can do there, but I'll talk about that in a second. Once you've trained up your monsters and you've decided you want to allocate them to your battle team, in which case the animals populate one of four different types, including formation types, attack types, range types, and support types. I'm not going to go into what each of those do. Just know there's four different types of monsters. You allocate them to slots on your character wheel that are represented by the face buttons on the controller. And then you go into a maze. Mazes are just, you know, randomly generated corridors. Unfortunately, I wish they were more engaging and exciting, but they are not. They are literally the typical roguelike corridor. You get started. You allocate a certain number of them per slot. You have a max you can allocate. You start out with a maximum of 40, but you can gain more over time through the research upgrades and sometimes through gains you get during the maze raids. Once you've done that, you are engaged. You go into the level, and all of your animals are following you. They're all on display at the same time. It is a clusterfuck of animals following your character around, and you'll walk forward. As you do so, eventually enemies will pop up on the screen, engaging you in combat. Using the face buttons attributed to the individual creatures, you can sick the animals onto these enemies, and they will attack them in the way of which they do. Pretty much all, with the exception of ranged creatures, will bum rush the animals and start just kind of beating the snot out of them. If the enemy is weak to one of your monsters, they will have that monster's picture splashed on top of their life bar, and that will give you the indication that, okay, sick this monster on them. It's a pretty visually apparent way to let you know who's effective against what. When the enemies are tracking back, you are able to press the left bumper button to initiate a guard. It calls all of your monsters directly back to you, and then you kind of put up a wall, and it allows you to shield yourself. If the enemy does manage to attack you and you get the guard up properly at the right time, you'll trigger a perfect guard, which generates more boost to some of your gauges. But if you screw it up and the monsters take damage, the monsters can get knocked unconscious, and if left unconscious too long, they will die. If you want to save them, you got to run over them to resuscitate them. But in addition to that, you share a personal bond with your monsters, so when the monsters take damage, your main character also takes damage, and that is the way that you can eventually get to the point of dying, unless you get healed by either a Pharmagia critter, or rather, a battle buddy, or by finding healing orbs on the map. As you battle, there are gauges over each monster type that will slowly fill up, either on their own or by way of a time gauge. When they fill up, you can trigger them to kind of make that type of monster fuse together into one, like, fused creature, and that creature will do a special attack on the enemy, doing additional damage. In addition to that, if you hit a monster with a fused attack that it is strong, where it's strong against the enemy, it will initiate the ability to do a fusion attack, which is another strong attack that you can do by fusing animals together. You might be asking, Pernell, how are you describing it? It's such a weird way to describe it. And the answer is, the best I can, because I got to the point where I was just mashing fucking buttons. but it got the job done, so whatever. In addition to that, eventually you will gauge or charge up a super special meter. And once that is charged up, you can do a special so that fuses every single monster you have into one super-de-duper monster. And it does one massive like screen-clearing attack. You will be engaging in that loop constantly. Because that is literally the flow of the game. No matter what new monsters you get, no matter how much you level up a monster, that is literally the flow of the game across the board. After you complete a section of a maze, you will unlock a variety of rewards. They come in generally two forms. Treasure chests that look like watermelon squares, and when you pop them open, you'll get items that can be used at the back in town to like fuse items, or to sell for money to buy other items. In addition to that, you will sometimes get what are called fairy seeds. And fairy seeds are, I'm not going to describe what they are in the game because it's a bunch of freaking gibberish, but utility-wise, they are buffs to either the different types of Pharmagia battle buddies you got, or to your actual main character, such as this specific monster does 30% more damage, or has 100% critical damage boost, etc., etc. And sometimes you can find fairy seeds that can join, almost combo together to give you a supercharged version of a fairy seed. So be on the lookout for those. You have a max amount of fairy seeds you can have, which can be increased by, again, using that research tree I described earlier, or sometimes through like some temporary buffs you can find in the dungeons themselves. But for the most part, buff that research tree, yada, yada, yada. Last two things I want to describe, because I've been talking about this game for a while and it's actually not that deep of a game, but there is a shuffling sheep bar which you can use to take on temporary quests, which can be used to gain rewards if you fulfill those quests. It might be things like beat X monster using only a specific type of battle buddy, or you know, find X number of items, or farm raise this number of critters of a specific type, that kind of thing. And then the last thing to talk about is the elemental shrines, because the main MacGuffin of this game ultimately revolves around you going to the five different continents in the world and releasing the elemental, I guess, spirit of the elemental lands of the world. And once you've done that, you will form relationships with these elemental spirits. And then the game will give you missions specifically pertaining to those characters, where when you fulfill those, you will bond with the elemental spirits and experience stories specifically pertaining to those spirits. Unique stories. And unique. I had to slip one of those in there.
Yeah.
And you will get buffs as you fulfill those. So it is within your best interest, both from a characterization experience perspective and also for buffing your character perspective, to engage in those elemental spirit bonding sessions. So get to it. I've rambled a lot about this game, and even though the game has a fair bit of length to it, the game's depth itself is not so much there. In fact, I've pretty much described everything you can do in the game, even though it might not seem like I did. I absolutely did. It's not even a bad game. I'm not going to be that guy that says that, but what I will say is the game can become samey fast, but if you're the type that can just kind of dumb down into something, like I honestly did when I played it, it can engage you and take up your time, because I did find myself doing things like, eh, just one more mission, eh, one more raising sim thing, because even though the farm raising sim part is pretty lackluster, it did give me a little bit of that monster rancher itch scratch that I've had here and there, where it's literally just tell this animal to go push a rock for a day to get an attack boost. That's cool, right? I only wish it wasn't limited to those stupid zingy jellies and limit and level limit requirements, because that thing is what takes away from me wanting to dive deep into that feature. It soft locks you out by story progression, which I think is kind of lame.
Yeah.
But with that said, if you can find yourself falling into that trap, you will have fun with this. Just don't come into it expecting a deep, sim-tastic experience, because it's really not that deep. It's pretty simple. But yeah, it does what it wants to do.
A lot of the criticisms on Steam seem to be that it's a bit too simple and simplistic.
Yeah.
Do you think that's a detriment, or do you think some people might actually dig the fact that it's more limited because they don't have like decision paralysis or just an overwhelming amount of stuff that you have to tackle in the game? Does this seem more like towards a casual audience? It's a $50 game. Give us your thoughts on everything.
Well, it's definitely a casual audience game, because I don't like being the guy as an individual reviewer that's going to come in and tell somebody, you're not going to like this. But what I can say is the game mechanically is simple. And if you find yourself drawn to games that aren't overly complex and you just want to kind of dumb down, throw some animals at a couple of bigger animals, then you will be fine with playing this game. But don't come into this game expecting a deep and complex sim with deep farm raising mechanics and deep animal raising mechanics, because you're going to find neither of those things. It's like someone taking a cake of a very plain vanilla cake and putting a sprinkle of chocolate, a sprinkle of vanilla, of banana, and a sprinkle of some other thing. And you're like, man, I would have been real if they just slathered that fucker with frosting. But no, you're getting some sprinkles and you're going to like it, or you're not going to buy it. If you're okay with a cake with a light dusting of various flavors, knowing you're not going to get the meat and potatoes or the deep filling, as it were, that you're craving, then you'll be fine with enjoying this game. It's fun in that regard. But it's definitely a try in the sense that if you're looking for something heavier, you're not going to get it here, and it might put you to sleep.
I'm just trying to imagine a chocolate cake and you cut into it and it's potatoes inside.
I'm sure someone in Ireland's done that.
Yeah. All right. Next up, Heads Will Roll Reforged, developed by 1917 Studios, published by Valkyrie Interactive, released back in February on the Switch and Steam for $19.99. Hardcore survival RPG with a non-linear story that lets you play as a young medieval soldier who over the course of battles and adventures becomes the most formidable and respected knight. Aki, tell us about your time with Heads Will Roll Reforged.
Okay, in this you play as some schmuck. I don't know if you even have a name, to be honest. It's just, hey, you. And you, yeah, this is medieval times, and you're, what would we call you? You're a peasant, you peasant, which means you have almost, but not quite, fuck all, and, you're kind of, what's the polite term? Fucking useless. Yes, those are the terms I'll use. And, you are in the middle of a war, because again, you're just some unlucky schmuck. So you get to fight against a bunch of people and hopefully not die a painful, bloody death. Woohoo! During this, you can, if you want, you can take from dead corpses and equip yourself with bits of armor and hopefully stronger weapons and things like that. And you get to talk to people that are part of your camp, because if you're talking to the enemies, you're bad. Don't do that. You build up kind of influence with specific groups. Your reputation with them increases, basically. Be that with specific women that you get to interact with, all of which you can effectively bang. Or with, you know, with your soldiers, they'll respect you more, they'll fight better with different groups that you're part of, the primary one being at the very beginning of the game, the Earl, whether they view you positively or negatively, which means the more they view you positively, the higher your ranking becomes and the more money you get every day. And throughout this, you're doing little missions that you can, providing you don't fuck up, and chances are you're going to fuck up a lot, a whole lot, so much. And everyone's going to hate you, at least for a few playthroughs, and then maybe people will start liking you. Maybe. We'll find out. There's a
just
few
a
different
quick
modes.
Heads up to the people hanging out in chat. If you browse the Steam page of this game, you might find some adult content in the screenshot section.
Oh, there's some boobies in it? Nice.
Yeah, there's lots of boobies in the screenshots.
Ah, very nice. Yeah. That is not properly in the main game. There's actually a DLC that you can get for free that adds that into it. It's otherwise censored. I didn't expect it to have pictures of that in the main game stuff. I figured that would be in that DLC.
Well, there are screenshots of the game that users uploaded.
I only view the stuff that's like in the actual store page itself.
This is in the like the discussions and the broadcasts and the artwork and
that stuff.
The screenshots, yeah.
Fair, very fair. Yeah, the DLC's the great.
Let's see, yeah. Most popular all time.
Oh God, how boobs, horrific is
boobs,
it?
Boobs, 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 butt, oh God, butt, boobs,
butt will be shown.
Butt, boobs, knights, boobs, clothed woman, butt. Anyway, the game.
Yeah. So basically, you can interact with people. You can't do it all the time, but it's good to go in and try to talk to them because you don't know when exactly you'll be able to talk to these people because the game doesn't tell you stuff like that. And sometimes they'll give you missions. Sometimes you can actually chat with them a little bit and your choices can raise your affection with these people or drop it like a rock. And yeah, otherwise it's all turn-based combat where you have to deal with a fatigue and both from just standard things you're doing throughout the day increases fatigue and you have to rest in camp to do it, but you can bring that fatigue onto the battlefield if you're a dumbass or if you're me and you just don't give a shit. And it brings a lot of negatives to your character if you do that. Again, not that I gave a shit. And there's also a stamina meter during actual combat that you have to deal with, and you want to keep it pretty high, because as long as it's high, you have a better chance of dodging that way out of attacks during enemy turns, and if it's low, you're significantly more likely to get hit in the face with a sword, which is not good, because you kind of want both your eyeballs. It's kind of useful that way. You get a plethora of weapons that you can choose from, and each one has a light attack, and they all have their own special heavy attack that does different things. There's also a ultimate attack that you can do. Some of them, it's like, oh, here's a feint. Another, it's like, here's a shield breaker, which is super useful for your allies to have. So pray that they have it. I don't know exactly what weapon uses it. I assume it's an axe, but I almost exclusively play with spears. Because they're fun. And I like stabbing people in the face, and it says, oh, head penetrated. And it's like, yeah, I win.
Penetrated.
Yeah. I also like collapsing lungs. That's pretty fun, too.
I like Trash and Thimber trading character names in chat. Thimber wants to name the character Ivan Fuck-A-Lot, and Trash Rando says Spontaneous Combustor.
That's great.
Gotta point out, the Switch version of this game is rated T for teen, so it's missing all the adult content that Aki's having fun with on Steam.
There's not actually a lot to it. It's mostly when you get your romance to full, you see a picture of the person, and with the adult content, it removes, you know, a cloth or whatever from their naked bodies. So you're not actually getting a lot from this. It's one scene for each lady. And I think there's seven ladies in total. You don't get to view all of them in a single playthrough. It's not possible. So there's that. Because, again, your choices impact the game in so much as if the Earl likes you, he will offer to keep you along. And that goes one pathway. Or you can reject to go with him because he's a scum-sucking piece of shit. Or you can just not be liked by him and he throws your ass out of the military. And then you become a mercenary traveling through France because this is a war between England and France. And so you get to work with England, the assholes, or you get to leave and go to France and be awesome. It is what it is. Those are the two main routes. And then it can end at least once on the French side before the very end of the game. From a specific ending that you can get. I haven't obtained that ending because it requires you to have low virtue. You can't be a pious piece of shit. And that is a great way to pass time and get rid of fatigue. So I like being highly virtuous. You can make your own armors in this, kind of. Basically, you take a cloth armor and a metal armor, and you combine them together to make a composite, which is a lot more useful than you might naturally think, because it makes the armor significantly stronger, which is fantastic, and you need it, because the armors kind of suck no matter what. Your shields can be broken by enemies, in which case, if they're completely broken, you can't repair them, you throw them the fuck away, and you get a new one. The trades area doesn't always have everything in stock. Sometimes it changes its stock each time you go in, and each time you go in takes up some of the free time you have between combat sections. And there's only so many combat sections, so this isn't just a game that continues forever. No, time passes and shit moves the fuck on. And you gotta get the fuck with the program or you're screwed. There are a few different difficulties. There's easy through hard, none of which level up your profile. And then there's heads will roll difficulty, which is the hardest difficulty. It's the big fuck you of this game. However, it levels up your profile. And basically what that does is it allows you to go into heads will roll mode, and all the points that you get to level up your profile get turned into points to allow you to upgrade your character more. It gives them more starting money, all that fun stuff. So the more you play in that mode, the more overpowered you can make your character. Like, an obscene amount. I think at this point, because I actually got all the way through the game on my first time with that mode, I got like 3,000 points or something, and I went from being able to level up like two of my things like twice to leveling all of them up like four times or something and still having money left over. It was great. So it just allows you to start off in a better and better position.
I found a cool screenshot for the game on the site. Ooh. I'm gonna send it to you, Aki. Let me know what you think of it. There it is.
Is it a lot of tatas? Please tell me it's a bunch of tatas. Oh, why'd you ruin? I believe that's Anna like that. Jesus, you're a monster.
How does that picture make you feel?
Well, if I had a girl boner, it would have immediately shriveled up and died. I don't think my heart will ever have a boner again, so, you know.
Yeah, that's not going to be used as the episode image.
Thank God.
The game.
I mean, you could put his face over each of the boobs and you could do it that way still.
Yeah. The game's $20 on the Switch. It's $15 on Steam. What do you think of this game?
I think it's pretty fun. I don't know how it's going to play on the Switch, but it's really well on PC. I really like it. I'm probably going to play it a handful of times because I want to get to level 999, because I assume that's the max, just so I can go in as a shiny golden god.
Nice.
Yeah, and I still need to go I love the patriarchy pathway of going full England. because both of my playthroughs, and let me point out, my playthroughs took, the two of them that I did took 24 and a half hours, basically.
Jeez.
Yeah. So, and they both went to helping France because fuck England. so I still need to go that pathway too. But yeah, I think it's fun. I think it's totally worth getting. Go out and have some fun. It also has two DLCs, neither of which I own, that add more content to it. Basically, one of them allows you to actually marry the girls. Otherwise, I don't think you can marry all of them. Some of them you can as part of the story, but I think this basically allows you to romance a girl, and then after the end, you get an epilogue where the two of you get married and stuff. And there's also one where after the game, you can come back and fuck some shit up because you've become a grizzled vet and you've lost your fucking mind, is what it seems to be. So I would love to play those if the company wants to give us those.
Well, if we get to check them out, we'll be sure to keep people updated. But for now, again, the game's 20 on the Switch, 15 on Steam. It's T-rated on the Switch. It's adult-rated on Steam, so buy where you feel is appropriate.
Yeah, get the Steam one.
There you go. Next game, Metal Slug Tactics, developed by Leaker Studio, published by Dotemu and Gamera Games. Released November 5th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC for $24.99. Metal Slug makes an explosive return, diving into this dynamic tactical RPG with roguelite thrill and experience the iconic run-and-gun action of the original series, redefined. Grab your weapons, assemble your squad, and conquer the battlefield to defeat the infamous rebel army. Purnell, what is going on in Metal Slug Tactics?
Well, what's going on in Metal Slug Tactics is a genre mashup that I don't think anyone ever saw happening, and yet it somehow kind of works. And that mashup is the strategy tactical gameplay with run-and-gun gameplay. Because, yeah, I personally feel like they nailed it in the best way they could possibly do it in these two games being combined. What this is essentially the Metal Slug characters, the primary, I'm sure there's a couple other guest characters I haven't unlocked, but Metal Slug characters being tasked with taking down an evil dictator by destroying his regime. And this is done by initially choosing three characters, three Metal Slug based characters, and then taking them out into the field. These characters themselves have their own loadouts that make them stand out and be unique from each other. But in addition to that, you can unlock additional loadouts for each character that gives you versatility in how they can perform. Like, you might have a character who is initially designed to be like a sort of all-arounder, but then later on unlock a version of him that is more built around support. So it's kind of cool that they give you the opportunity to say, okay, I like this character, but maybe I don't like the way they play here, but later on I do, and I like this version of them, so I'm going to use that. Lots of mixing and matching is what I'm getting at. But once you've chosen your three-character loadout, you'll be tasked with choosing a region. Assuming you've unlocked the region, of course. And then once you're at the region, you are giving a sort of top-down map. This map allows you to choose various nodes with which to engage combat. Each area, there is a certain number of missions you have to engage before the boss character comes out to kind of come and kick your ass. But up until that point, you have some choices. The levels that you get to choose from are pretty much static in their actual layout, but the enemy population and the goals associated with those levels will vary. So you might choose a level that says clear this level in 4 turns, but you might also get a bonus if you kill 10 enemies on that level while surviving it. I'm sorry, rephrase that. Survive in 4 turns, but if you kill 10 enemies, you'll get a bonus for having both goals accomplished. Once you choose the level you want to go to and you know what goals you're trying to fulfill, you will be able to take your three characters and slot them wherever you want on the map's pre-designated, disbursement locations. And then gameplay kicks off. The way the gameplay itself works is, on its surface, a typical tactical game. You have enemies on the map, and you have your guys on the map. Each character has a main weapon, which has unlimited ammo, and whatever range it's going to have. Some are close range, some are long range. And then every character has a sub-weapon, which is typically more powerful, but with limited ammo available per stage. Now, the thing that makes this feel more like a run-and-gun game, as the Metal Slug namesake says, though, is that the game incentivizes you to move on every turn. A lot of strategy games, you might be able to find yourself a good bit of cover and kind of hang back on the side behind that cover and pick people off as they come at you as best you can. In this game, they specifically incentivize you to move on every turn, typically as far as you possibly can, because when you move your character, you generate adrenaline. Adrenaline can be used for two things. One, it can be used to kind of give yourself a little bit of an extra defensive boost when enemies come to attack you on that turn. And it can also be used to power up your special abilities that you have available to you. Some you start with, others you earn as you progress through the levels. But as a result, you will find yourself sometimes moving even in situations where you might find yourself feel like you might have otherwise been better off hunkering down. It's just the name of the game. Another reason why you might find yourself wanting to move yourself around a fair bit is because the game has a what's called a synchronization system. What that is if a character initiates an attack against an opponent and one of your teammates is within eyesight of that enemy taking damage, they can then in turn follow up with an attack of their own. It starts you kind of setting up a situation where you're kind of connecting multiple dots and connecting multiple red threads of fate to get guys lined up to just have each character attack each character is attacking the same character multiple times as much as possible. So line up a character, he fires a shot, the other two characters can see him, boom, they take a shot. And then magically, the other characters did too. And it ends up being pretty fun that way. Of course, unless you kill the guy, in which case, whoops, overkill. You gotta move on. Shuffle those bad boys around. You get one movement and one attack per character. If you attack before moving, that burns the movement too, so choose wisely. However, some characters, if you're lucky, might have an ability that gives them an additional movement if they pull off their work, or sometimes even an additional attack if they pull off their movement effectively. So get it in. Each level is typically fairly short, though if you have analysis paralysis like me, double or triple that, because, well, yeah. But I feel like if you're a normal person, the levels are succinct enough that you'll get through them fairly quickly. Though an entire run, on the other hand, might take a fair bit longer than that. But the runs are fun, and you can save during levels or in between levels, so whoop-de-doo, it's not all that bad. Just, you know, pick up and go as you please. I feel like the game is satisfying, and I feel like the fact that the levels are not random in their layout is kind of a plus in my opinion, because I am the type that, even as much as I like roguelikes, I kind of hate that they just, when they do that whole, I honestly kind of described with Farmaji just two reviews ago, when they just do that thing where it's just like, here's a car, here's a bland corridor, or here are a bunch of open rooms that are just there for you to find randomly placed things. In the case of this game, the levels are very intentionally designed with ramparts and places where it's like, you know, you can get a sniper vantage point if you can pull it off, because the game also has a tier system where if you're on one level, you can't shoot above or below unless you have a weapon that's designed for that kind of thing. So you will be deliberately choosing where to put your character, and it's not going to be based on how the game randomly generated a layout. So I respect and appreciate that. It could mean for some people that the game has a limited shelf life, but considering the fact that the levels have different difficulties you can choose, and again, the different characters you can choose with their various layouts, so long as you're okay with doing harder modes and harder difficulties, you've got a fair bit of gameplay here. And the last thing I'm going to say in regards to that specific topic is, you look at a game like the actual original Metal Slug games, and they are specifically run-and-gun games with very finely tuned levels, and people replay those games over and over and over again because they're just freaking fun. And I think this game nails that too. In addition to that, it also has the Metal Slug energy to it too. It translates that very well. The characters are well animated. The enemies are well animated. They feel entertaining to watch interact with each other. Is the best way to put it. Even in the hub, when you're choosing your individual character, just kind of hanging out playing arcade machines and having conversation with each other, and they're all just kind of being silly, just like Metal Slug is. It's freaking silly, as it should be, and I love it for that.
I was just going to say, it clocks in at $24.99. What are your thoughts on it? A lot of people think that might be a little bit high. Do you think the content is there to justify it? Do you think it's a good price?
I absolutely think the content is there to justify it. I mean, it comes down to the usual bit with people decide for themselves what is monetarily worth it for them, and games always go on sale. If you want a cheaper way for sale, but I think the game is very good. I think the game is worth experiencing, whether it's now or later, it's up to the buyer. But I do feel as though whatever price sits well for you, you will not regret spending the money on the game. If you like Metal Slug, if you like the Metal Slug universe, rather, if you like tactical gameplay, title, I keep wanting to say tactical RPG, but it's not an RPG, it's a strategy game. But if you like those kinds of things, if you like those games, you like that franchise, even if you don't like tactical games, but you like Metal Slug, I still think it's worth giving it a try, because this could be the bridge to you liking tactical games. Yeah, which could, sometimes that's the reason why they make games like this. To say, hey, you might want to try something.
That gateway drug.
That's right. Hook it to my veins.
Just like marijuana is a gateway drug.
But it's not habit forming.
Or KFC.
You don't want this shit, Dewey.
That's right. One of the best running gags of the movie ever. I loved it. It's the cheapest drug there is.
But isn't it habit forming? It's not habit forming.
It's not habit forming. Yo, what does this shit, Dewey?
Walk hard, the Dewey Cox story, if people are wondering. But
it's so fucking good.
One final game we got to talk about tonight is Liberté, developed by Superstatic, published by Ultimate Games. Released November 15th on Series X and S for $24.99. Step into the chaos of the French Revolution like never before. Liberté is a thrilling action roguelike with deck builder set in an alternate history Paris, where political unrest collides with cosmic terror. Take control of René, a Parisian caught in a deadly struggle among four factions while being manipulated by the mysterious Lady Bliss, an interdimensional being with her dark motives. Aki, what is going on in this game? It sounds nothing like what I expected.
Yeah, it wasn't exactly like I expected either. I was kind of expecting this to be, you know, like Shogun, but French Revolution times. It's very not. Basically, you play as René, and you wake up with little to no memory. You kill a couple assholes who happen to be royal guards, and then you come across a giant fucking heart. And when I say giant, I don't mean, oh, it's the size of your hand. No, it's the size of you. And it's like, hey, yeah, I'm talking to you. I'm the heart, by the way. You need to take me and get me the fuck up out this bitch. And in your infinite wisdom, you decide without thought, sure, let's take this giant talking heart. Because, you know, that makes sense in some fucking realm. Yeah, not this one. Not this one, but yeah, hey, it's somewhere. And you escape into basically the sewer system and drop it off there. And then it's like, oh yes, I am Lady Bliss, and now you're one of my followers, and I shall bestow upon you greatness. And we're going to find France a good leader. And yeah, you go about interacting. You are part of the revolutionary army, basically. Not that you remember that, but you are reminded of it. And you are dealing with the revolutionaries, with the church, with some tribesmen, and with, you know, the king and his people, basically, the royalists. Those are the four groups that you get to interact with throughout the game. As for the actual gameplay itself, it is a roguelike. It's one of those roguey types. I don't fucking know which one. I don't care.
Rogan.
It's one of those roguey types, yes. And it's a roguelike, also,
it claims.
Okay, then it's that one. And it's also a collectible card game at the same time. So I rue the day I took this game. for those who don't understand, I don't like collectible card games all that much. But this one, it's not terrible. It behaves very similar to games like Hades and the like. You go in, you get some power-ups, but those power-ups are in the form of cards. You have a certain amount of mana required to play a card, and you get that mana by destroying other cards that you obtain. How much mana you get is based on how much mana it takes to play that card. So anywhere from 1 to, I think the highest I have is a 6 on occasion. And yeah, they give you different abilities. It can be one of a set of 3 main abilities, a consumable, or it can be passive abilities. Fill your deck with passive abilities and a whole bunch of high mana costing stuff that you can sacrifice, so you can just have all the passives, because passives are really all that matters, folks. And yeah, so if you have a card that requires 3 mana to play, you can sacrifice it and get 3 mana, so that you can play other cards that equal up to 3 mana cost, which is interesting, I guess. I've not seen a game like that, so it might even be unique.
Unique.
Dun, dun, dun. And yeah, so you get a whole bunch of cards, a whole slew of them. There isn't a single pathway through the game either, because you have a bunch of missions that you can choose. In the first, and there's different tiers of the world as well, but I'm not really going to touch too much on that. But you usually have, when you're first starting the game, you have 2 different paths you can take. And it's kind of randomized between 1 of 4 missions, or 2 of 4 missions. Basically, there's royalists fighting rebels, and it's randomized which one of those you play on the side of. And then there's also the church fighting the tribesmen, because of the black magic voodoo. And it's randomized which one of them you're on the side, you get to choose the side of. And then after you get through that chapter of the game, it brings you to the next chapter, which puts you again, whatever side versus someone the fuck else. Sometimes it's, you know, if you choose like, oh, I'm going to help the rebels against the royalists, your next mission is, one of them's probably going to be rebels versus somebody. It might be royalist, it might be voodoo, it might be church, you don't know. And then usually the church versus the voodoo or whatever will still be there if you want to just immediately jump to that instead. And yeah, you get to keep all the cards that you pick up through all the games, and you have to pay points and stuff, different resources that you pick up throughout the levels, to unlock them permanently, to where you can just add them to your deck, which is what you're likely to find throughout the level. You can have up to 40 cards in your deck. I have never found more than like 15 cards in a thing, so I would say give yourself 20 cards and the fuck the hell with the rest of it, because you're never going to see it. So pick the cards you really like and enough stuff to get rid of that you can use all of those and just ignore everything else. Make your life a little easier. You can have up to 2 of most cards in your deck, so that makes life real easy, especially if you're like, oh, I want high mana cards to burn so I can get more items, more uses of items out of it. Because as you get further and further into a level, you unlock levels for your character. That all gets dashed away when you restart. So once you're most of the way through a level, you have like enough room to have 6 mana. So you can get a 6 mana card, burn it then, and now you have 6 mana. So if you have a few, you know, 3 mana cards that you really want to help increase your base abilities, well, bam, there you go, problem solved. You start off with the ability to burn 3 mana to fill out your mana gauge. You can burn more, but there's no point in that, because that mana just goes into the fucking ether. So it's always best to have some really shitty low mana cards and some really high mana cards for later on, because the cards don't leave until you die. So you'll have them the whole time until you burn them or use them. So yeah, it is really, really fucking hard. I think I spent like 10 hours in the game before I beat any of the first bosses. And yeah, I still have trouble with the first bosses of the Royal or the Rebel. And I can't even fight the other ones because they have a whole bunch of fuck you attacks that I just haven't been able to quite figure out. Because each group plays completely differently, and you have different bosses for each group. Like, at the end of the first level of the Royalists and the Rebels, if you choose the Rebel side, you fight this full knight who will fuck up your shit. He does a lot of spinning attacks and a lot of quick strikes. And if you play as a Royalist, the person you end up to sets fire to, all the floors. And if you walk in it, you get burnt and does a whole bunch of jumping ground pounds and shit. He's a real annoying asshole, and I hate him. So, and I haven't even gotten to the end of the first level of the other two, mostly because every time I pick, I happen to be helping the church and the voodoo people. They kick the shit out of me so easy. As you do all this, you also get to learn more and more about these individuals, because every time you beat a level, you get points towards leveling up with that group. And as you level up with that group, you get different rewards. Sometimes it's resources, sometimes it unlocks randomized cards for you. One of the first ones for the Rebels is you unlock a weapon and character skin. I have absolutely no idea how to access it, because you get to play as Ana, and I haven't figured out how to do that, or else I would have immediately done that and only played as Ana from that point forward, because she's cute and therefore automatically is better than Renee.
Shocker that you would pick the cute one.
Yeah, who's going to choose the dude? Otherwise, it's just you're looping. I don't know. I think there's 4 chapters I think you go through if you keep, just choosing to continue the path you're going. I think there's 4 of them until the end. I don't know, because I've never gotten to the end of the second one. Because, again, the game's fucking hard, and it does not care, and fuck you.
Well, the game is hard, but is the decision to pick it up a hard one? The game's $24.99. Give us your thoughts.
If you like roguelikes, I think this is totally going to be up your alley. I thought it was really fun. If you like Souls-likes, this is probably going to be up your alley, because you really have to understand how to dodge attacks. Because the combat in this may be is kind of Souls-like mixed with, all the other types with roguelikes. So I think this is something that a lot of people are going to end up really enjoying, but they're going to have a lot of trouble with. So I'm totally for it. More pain and misery for all.
Cool. All right. Well, that is it for this episode. Go figure, a 4 review episode, and we go an hour and a half.
Well, we talked for a good hour of it to start.
We did chat a lot at the beginning. A good 40 minutes of that was just chattery. So,
I mean, if you want, we can do more of my games. I don't care. You know me.
No, your other games are with Bree.
Fair.
Get Bree on the horn. We can go live. We can do it right now.
She's
Bree?
Streaming.
Bree's streaming right now.
Yeah.
I mean, we can still contact her, but I doubt she'll come.
she can review on her stream on the podcast.
Matter of fact, she's playing. She's like,
leave me the fuck alone. Click.
No, she's playing one of the games she's reviewing today.
Well, there we go. But that is it for this episode. Thanks to you two for being here, hanging out the whole time. Music this episode. Oh God, I have no idea what I could play. I'm wondering if there's anything from The Little Mermaid on Overclocked Remix.
Under the sea. There is. I'm sure the Little Mermaid game has had a 8-bit rendition of it or something, and then someone probably covered it.
No idea.
Little Nemo. I don't see Little Mermaid. Is under the, maybe?
Little Mermo.
Nope. I don't see Little Mermaid. Oh well. I don't know. I'll find something to play.
Battle on the Big Bridge.
Battle on the Big Bridge. There we go. From Black Mages?
Yeah, there you go. Do that.
There we go.
Totally.
Anyone have any final words to end the show?
Fuck the Chesapeake Bay Bridge.
Yeah, fuck that bridge.
Works with me.